Section 2, War on the Plains. As you read, look for the federal government's efforts to get and maintain control over the Plains tribes. The tribes resettled to Indian Territory after the Civil War, and vocabulary terms, reservation, dugout, garrison, buffalo soldiers, rapport, and renegade. While the Civil War and Reconstruction were happening in the eastern half of the Indian Territory, trouble was brewing in the western half. Hostile Indians threatened the post-war Euro-American development of the West. Military personnel with Civil War experience moved from the battlefields east of the Mississippi to those in Indian country. Plains tribes during the war. Many of the Plains Indian tribes stayed in the Indian Territory during the Civil War. Because military regiments were often called to fight elsewhere, protection for settlers and other Indians was often non-existent. Some bands of the Plains Indians took advantage of the lack of military protection and periodically raided settlers in an effort to drive them from their hunting grounds. Raids on the hated white settlers sometimes resulted in loss of life and captives. Raids on other tribes were usually to steal horses and cattle, which were then sold to traders. With Union forts already abandoned in Indian Territory, a party of Comanche raided outlying Chickasaw settlements for horses and cattle in 1864. The Confederate military organized the Caddo Frontier Guard to prevent raids on the Chickasaw and other tribes. In spite of the Caddo Guard, the Comanche again raided Chickasaw settlements in 1865. A Chickasaw party soon went after the Comanche raiders, who had made camp near present-day Indiahoma. The ensuing battle lasted several hours. After the Comanche surrendered, the Chickasaw rounded up their stolen horses and cattle and returned to their homes. The Cheyenne and some Arapaho joined the Comanche raiders in their war against white settlers and Colorado troops. The Southern Cheyenne were eventually driven out of Colorado in 1864 after what came to be called the Sand Creek Massacre. Several bands of Cheyenne and a few Arapaho, over 550 people, were camped on Sand Creek when they were attacked by Colorado regiments. Over 150 Indians, mostly women and children, were killed in the surprise attack. Some Cheyenne, including a band led by Chief Black Kettle, were later given a reservation, an area set aside for use by a particular people in the Indian Territory. Fort Nichols. Embittered by their dealings with the military and white settlers, many Plains Indian warriors targeted wagon trains and freighters. To help provide safe passage on the Cimarron route of the Santa Fe Trail, noted trapper, soldier, and Indian fighter Colonel Kit Christopher Carson established Camp Nichols in what is now the Oklahoma Panhandle. Carson, the commander of the 1st Regiment of New Mexico Cavalry Volunteers, had intended to locate the camp in New Mexico, but mistakenly placed it several miles east of the New Mexico border. The camp was later called Fort Nichols. Some 300 soldiers were housed in tents and dugouts, houses built half in the ground, half above, at Camp Nichols. Officers' quarters were army tents until the dugout homes were built. The sides of the homes above ground were covered with stone. Timber for roof supports had to be hauled 11 miles. The floors were dirt, and the roofs were made of sod. Each house had two rooms, blankets for doors, and white cloth in place of glass over the window openings. One of the few women at the camp was Marion Russell, wife of Lieutenant R.D. Russell. Accommodations were rough. The Russells' furniture included a folding army table and a bed made from a 6-foot log that had been split in two, laid on the floor, and covered with boughs and blankets. Cooking was done in a Dutch oven. a large heavy pot, usually of cast iron, with a tight lid used for slow cooking, in an open fireplace. The food was limited to hardtack, a hard biscuit, bacon, beans, beef, venison, flour, sugar, and coffee. Wagon trains arriving from the west gathered at Camp Nichols. Every 2 weeks, soldiers would escort them to Fort Dodge or Fort Larned, Kansas, and then return with westbound wagons. The camp was never attacked, perhaps, as the Indians said, because they believed Carson had strong medicine. Fort Nichols was abandoned in September 1865. Medicine Lodge Treaty. In an effort to stop the attacks by the Plains tribes and to encourage them to adopt a farming lifestyle, the U.S. Department of Interior sent a peace commission to negotiate with the Plains tribes in 1867. Over 5,000 people from five Plains tribes, Kiowa, Comanche, Kiowa Apache, Cheyenne, and Arapaho, agreed to meet at Medicine Lodge in Kansas, where the water of the Medicine River was believed to have healing powers. For 3 weeks, the Indians and government commissioners negotiated. In spite of many speeches, the terms of the treaties had generally already been determined by the government. The Plains tribes would have to live on reservations, learn to farm rather than roam the prairies, and learn the white man's way of life. The Indians would be protected from white hunters and would receive food and clothing every year. Each tribe would have its own reservation. The Kiowa and Comanche signed a joint treaty on October 21, 1867, in which they agreed to live on a reservation located in what is now southwestern Oklahoma. In a separate treaty, the Kiowa Apache agreed to also live on the Kiowa and Comanche reservation. The reservation specified for the Cheyenne and Arapaho tribes was eventually located along the North Canadian River in what is now Western Canadian County and Blaine County. Sheridan's Winter Campaign. In spite of the treaties, the hostilities between the Plains Indians and the settlers continued. Brutal attacks in Kansas, Colorado, Texas, and other areas resulted in many Indian and white men, women, and children killed or captured. Major General Philip Sheridan organized a campaign to end the attacks by the Plains tribes and force them to live on the reservations. Sheridan chose winter for the campaign, knowing that winter was usually a quiet time for the tribes. Supply depots were needed for both the military during the campaign and for the Indians living on the reservations. Sheridan directed General Alfred Sully to establish camp supply in the northwestern part of the Indian Territory. A blizzard slowed the work, but the camp was established on November 18, 1868, in what is now Woodward County. The Battle of the Washita. The Cheyenne, led by Chief Black Kettle, had set up a winter camp along the Washita River, Roger Mills County, a location that was not on their reservation. That camp was a few miles from larger camps of other Cheyenne, Kiowa, and Apache. Black Kettle and Arapaho Chief Big Mouth traveled from the winter camp to Fort Cobb in November 1868 to ask General William Hazen for peace and protection. When Hazen told them he didn't have authority to provide protection for tribes off their reservations, the chiefs returned to their camps. Some young Cheyenne warriors had ignored the Medicine Lodge Treaty and continued to roam on their ancestral lands. Led by Cheyenne war chief Roman Nose, the band furiously attacked Kansas settlers, and wagon trains stopped crossing western Kansas. Sheridan directed Lieutenant Colonel George Custer to find and punish the Indians who were responsible for the Kansas raids. Custer and 800 troops of the 7th Cavalry rode south out of Camp Supply on November 23rd, following the trail of a small raiding party. One of the officers with Custer was Captain Albert Barnitz, who had mixed feelings about the government's handling of the Indians. Quote, it is certainly foolish to fight Indians with one hand and to make presents and give them arms with the other." End quote. He wrote, Custer's troops, marching through new snow, reached the Washita Valley and Black Kettle's Cheyenne camp just after midnight on November 27th. They quietly took positions and attacked the 51 lodges just before dawn. Quote, "Custer and his legion came thundering down the long divide. The Indian village rang with unearthly war whoops, the quick discharge of firearms, the clamorous barking of dogs, the cries of infants, and the wailing of women." End quote. Custer reported about 100 men, women, and children were killed, although the Cheyenne claimed 30 had lost their lives. Chief Black Kettle and his wife, Medicine Woman Later, were among those killed. More than 50 Cheyenne were captured. 21 of Custer's men were killed. Troops slaughtered hundreds of the Indians' horses and mules the troops didn't want, and they burned the Indians' food, clothes, blankets, and lodges. The deafening noise of the battle quickly awoke other Cheyenne, Arapaho, and Kiowa warriors camped downriver. As they hurried to help Black Kettle, they encountered Major Joel Elliott's detachment. Elliott was killed in the fighting. Custer quickly retreated to Camp Supply with the hostages. The Battle of Soldier Spring. As part of Sheridan's winter campaign, Lieutenant Colonel A.W. Evans led troops from New Mexico on November 17, 1868, across snow-covered prairies to the western base of the Wichita Mountains in the southwestern part of the Indian Territory. A band of Nokone Comanche was camped in the valley near where Soldier Spring Creek emptied into the North Fork of the Red River. The ancient mountains had provided protection for Indian camps for centuries. The military believed that some of the warriors in the camp had been involved in raids in Texas a few months earlier. On Christmas Day, 1868, Evans' troops attacked the Comanche camp of 60 lodges. The Indians were outnumbered and outmanned. The first artillery shell fired from a small howitzer cannon was a dud, but the second shell burst in the camp, scattering horses and people who quickly fled. Evans' men entered the Comanche camp and destroyed teepees, food, supplies, and even buckskin dolls. Several tons of dried buffalo meat, the tribe's entire winter food supply, were destroyed by throwing it into a nearby pond, which came to be called Dried Beef Pond. There were not as many deaths at the Battle of Soldier Spring as at the Battle of the Washita, but it was a significant part of the plan to confine all the Plains Indians to reservations. That plan included destroying food, shelter, and horses that the Indians needed to survive, so that they would be forced to live on reservations where the government would provide for all their basic needs. Fort Sill. Sheridan believed a garrison, military post, was needed in the heart of Comanche country in the southwestern part of Indian Territory. Colonel Benjamin Grierson, commander of the 10th U.S. Cavalry, selected a site for a camp in the foothills of the Wichita Mountains in 1868. Sheridan arrived January 7, 1869, and drove the first stake in the ground for the site of the new Camp Wichita. Troops were immediately ordered to move from Fort Cobb to the new camp. For the first year, soldiers lived in tents, and officers were housed in crude log and mud picket houses. The black troops of the 10th Cavalry, or Buffalo Soldiers as the Indians called them, did much of the actual construction of the fort. White troops from the 6th Infantry helped quarry stone for the buildings. Stones and rough logs cut along the nearby Medicine Bluff Creek were used to construct the first building. In June 1869, 25 wagons of tools, hardware, stonemasons, and carpenters arrived. A spring house, a storehouse built over a spring of water, was built with a slab stone trough inside to provide a cool place for storing food. Other buildings included a hospital, stone guardhouse, and chapel. A road was cut to the Texas border, and a racetrack was built near the camp. On July 2, 1869, Sheridan renamed the camp Fort Sill in honor of his friend, Brigadier General Joshua Sill, who had died in the Civil War. First planned as a 6-company post, Fort Sill soon grew to house over 500 troops. Although isolated, the post was a military showplace. Lieutenant R.G. Carter wrote, quote, "A more beautiful locality could hardly be imagined, wild, romantic, and full of nature." End quote. A new Indian policy. In 1869, President Ulysses S. Grant approved a peace policy toward the Native Americans and asked Quakers, members of the Society of Friends denomination, to help with tribal affairs. Laurie Tatum was chosen to serve as the Indian agent at Fort Sill for the Comanche, Kiowa, and Apache tribes, a position he held until 1873. As Indian agent, Tatum had many duties, including distributing rations and annuity goods. Rations included beef, bacon, flour, coffee, sugar, soap, tobacco, and soda. Annuity goods consisted of blankets, brown muslin, satinette, calico, hosiery, needles, thread, a few suits of men's clothes, beads, tin cups, butcher knives, iron kettles, frying pans, hoes, and small axes. Sugar and coffee were the most prized of the rations, and Tatum thought that ample supplies of those items would keep the Indians peacefully on the reservation. Fewer annuity goods were received each year, however. Tatum wrote, quote, "They, Indians, repeatedly told me that when they behaved well, they got but a small amount of goods, and the only way to get a large amount was to go on the warpath a while, kill a few white people, steal a good many horses and mules, and then make a treaty, and they would get a large amount of presents and a liberal supply of goods for that fall." End quote. Soldiers were restricted by the peace policy in how they dealt with the Indians, which some warriors took as a sign of weakness. Some Plains warriors, bitter toward the U.S. government and white settlers, continued to raid in nearby states. Kiowa Chief Kicking Bird, accused of being a coward for getting along with the white people, felt he had to form a war party to keep his honor with the tribe. In 1870, Kicking Bird's party left its camp in the Indian Territory and headed into Texas. Some of the young warriors broke away from the group and attacked a mail stage near the Little Wichita River. Alerted to the attack, a Texas cavalry regiment pursued the warriors. A skirmish followed at Kicking Bird's camp, but the cavalry retreated when they saw they were outnumbered. After returning to the Indian Territory, however, Kicking Bird dedicated himself to establishing peaceful relations with the whites. A number of agencies were set up in Indian Territory to deal with the various tribes. The Darlington Indian Agency was established in 1869 for the Cheyenne and Arapaho tribes. Brenton Darlington, the first superintendent, selected the site, northwest of El Reno, where the Fort Sill Military Road crossed the North Canadian River. In 1871, he began the Cheyenne Indian School, Concho, 2 miles north of Darlington. The Arapaho Indian Boarding School opened in 1872. When Darlington died in 1872, John Miles became the agent. Miles soon hired John Seeger, a Quaker, as a mason at the Darlington Agency. Seeger arrived at Darlington on Christmas Eve, 1872. He learned the tribe's languages and developed a good rapport, relationship, with them. In 1874, Miles's wife suggested Seeger be appointed superintendent of the Arapaho Indian Boarding School. Seeger quickly turned the school into a great success. The school opened in 1872 with 12 students. By 1876, it had grown to 115. In 1879, Seeger left and began ranching 50 miles to the southwest along Pond Creek, Washita County. In 1886, Seeger was approached about establishing a colony for Cheyenne and Arapaho Indians on the Washita River. A grove of walnut trees on Seeger's ranch became headquarters for the Seeger Colony and the Seeger Indian Training School. Hundreds of students attended the school before it closed in 1932. The Wichita Agency was first established in 1859 when over 1,000 Caddo, Wichita, and Tonkawa were moved to Indian Territory. In 1869, the agency located at Anadarko was called the Wichita Caddo Agency. In 1879, the Kiowa Comanche Agency was consolidated with the Anadarko Agency. Other agencies, many headed by Quakers, included the Union Agency at Muskogee for the Five Tribes, the Quapaw Agency at Wyandotte for the Seneca, Seneca Shawnee, Quapaw, Peoria, Ottawa, Miami, and Wyandotte. The Sac and Fox Agency near Stroud for Sac and Fox, Iowa, Kickapoo, and Shawnee Potawatomi Indians, the Osage and Kaw Agency at Pawhuska, and an agency at Ponca City for the Ponca, Otomizuri, Pawnee, and Tonkawa tribes. The Red River War. Conditions for the Plains Indians had not improved by 1874. Food promised by the U.S. government was inadequate and often of poor quality. White hunters were slaughtering buffalo by the thousands, selling the hides in the east, and leaving the carcasses to rot on the plains. In 1874, the U.S. government declared that all Indians must live on the reservations by late summer. Any Indians caught off the reservations would be considered renegades, outlaws. This reservation restriction was the most difficult requirement for the Plains Indians, who for centuries had roamed the plains at will. Most of the Plains Indians believed their situation was desperate and that they must either fight or starve. Comanche, Kiowa, Southern Cheyenne, and Arapaho warriors began to talk of war. Led by Isate of the Quadhati Band of Comanche and Comanche Chief Quanah Parker, the warriors decided to attack a settlement of buffalo hunters at Adobe Walls in the Texas Panhandle in June 1874. The attack was unsuccessful as the 28 hunters with their long-range rifles were able to defend themselves. Over the next year, a number of bloody battles occurred in the Red River War in the Texas Panhandle. Troops from Fort Sill and Fort Supply joined their Texas counterparts in the effort to get the Indians back onto their reservations in the Indian Territory. The majority of Kiowa followed Kicking Bird in staying on the reservation, but Principal Chief Lone Wolf and Chief Mamonti took a party of 50 into the war. The military finally broke the resistance by capturing and killing most of the Indians' horses. Without their horses, the Indians were ineffective. Over the next several weeks, bands of Indians surrendered. Quanah Parker surrendered at Fort Sill in June 1875. 72 captured chiefs from several tribes were sent to prison in Florida, where they were held until 1878. Last Battle in the Territory. In 1877, the Northern Cheyenne were forced to relocate to the Cheyenne and Arapaho Reservation in the Indian Territory. Most of the people in the Northern Tribe were content to join the Southern Cheyenne on the reservation, even though they had inadequate rations and hardships. But about a third of the Northern Cheyenne refused to join the Southern Tribe. Dissatisfied with their new life and homesick, they decided to break away and return to the Northern Plains. Dull Knife, Little Wolf, and Morning Star led almost 90 warriors and 250 women and children away from the reservation on September 9, 1878. The escape was discovered about 12 hours later, and Companies G and H of the 4th U.S. Cavalry at Fort Reno quickly pursued the Indians. The fleeing Cheyenne encountered two cowboys hauling salt from the Great Salt Plains and killed them for their guns and horses. The Cheyenne had not planned to kill people, but they did plan to get back to their home at any cost. The cavalry, led by Captain Joseph Rendelbrock, caught up with the Indians on September 13th in the rolling hills and canyons north of the Cimarron River in Woods County near Turkey Springs. An Arapaho scout was sent to talk the Cheyenne into surrendering and returning to the reservation, but they refused. Fighting soon started between the cavalry and the Cheyenne. The Indians set fire to the prairie grass. With no water for the troops or for their horses, the cavalry had to retreat at dawn on the 14th. The Battle of Turkey Springs ended when the warriors pursued the retreating cavalry for several miles. The engagement was the last armed conflict in the Indian Territory between the U.S. cavalry and the American Indians. Relocating other tribes. Although the territory for the American Indians was shrinking, the number of tribes relocated to it continued to grow. More Indians meant more military posts, although most of them were temporary camps or sub-posts to protect tribes, stagecoaches, and cattle trails. Some of the additional posts in the 1870s included Camp Near Cheyenne Agency, later Fort Reno, Sewell's Stockade near Jefferson, Sheridan's Roost near Orion, Camp Robinson and Camp Otter by Tipton, Camp Auger at Granfield, and Camp Davidson near Humphreys. Cantonment near Canton was built in 1879 to stop Indian raids. In 1868, the citizen Potawatomi were pressured to sell their Kansas lands. The citizen band then purchased a new 30-square-mile reservation between the Canadian and North Canadian rivers and the Seminole Nation and the Indian Meridian. They soon discovered that the government had assigned that same land to the absentee Shawnee. The two tribes finally settled the dispute, but not until 25 years later. Some of the land was allotted to the tribes, and the surplus land was open to settlement. The early treaties referred to the Indian Territory as the Indian Country south of Kansas. The Potawatomi land, according to the treaty, would never be included within the jurisdiction of any state or territory unless an Indian Territory be organized. The first treaty in which the government recognized the area of Oklahoma as Indian Territory was the 1872 treaty with the Osage tribe. The Osage sold their land in Kansas and purchased a reservation in Indian Territory in the eastern end of the Cherokee Outlet that includes the present-day Osage County. The Kaw or Kansa tribe, like the Osage, bought land in 1873 from the Cherokee in the area of the outlet that is today in northeastern Kay County. It took the Kaw only 17 days to move to their new land, arriving on June 21, 1873. The Pawnee tribe had ceded most of their land in Nebraska through three treaties. The rest of their Nebraska land was sold in 1872. The Pawnee were apprehensive about their move to Indian Territory. They had reason for that apprehension since they ran into their old enemies, the Kiowa and Osage. The Pawnee stayed at the Wichita Agency the winter of 1873 to 1874 as bands of the tribe gathered. Eventually, the Pawnee purchased a reservation between the Arkansas and Cimarron Rivers, parts of Pawnee and Payne counties. In 1865, the Ponca tribe had ceded a third of their reservation in the Northern Plains. However, the government had given the Sioux the same land that the Ponca had reserved for themselves. The Sioux overran the Ponca, killing families and livestock. For 8 years, Ponca Chief Standing Bear asked the government for help. In 1876, unknown to the Ponca, Congress decided to move them to Indian Territory. When an agent suddenly appeared to force the Ponca to move, most of the tribe refused until troops appeared to back up the agent. In the summer of 1877, Chief Standing Bear led his people to their new land in the northeastern part of the territory. They first went to the Quapaw Reservation. Later, in 1881, they found an area they liked better on the Salt Fork River. The Ponca suffered many deaths during their first years after removal, including Standing Bear's son. The grieving chief decided to bury his son on their old homeland. During a blizzard and without permission of the agent, Standing Bear and a party of 30 Ponca made the long journey to the Omaha agency, where they were arrested. When the public learned of the situation and the case was reviewed, the Ponca were released. Publicity of the unfair treatment of the Ponca reached the East, and in 1880, President Rutherford Hayes appointed a special committee to investigate. Congress compensated the tribe and secured better conditions for them. In 1879, Nez Perce and Chief Joseph were brought to Indian Territory as prisoners of war from their reservation in the Northwest. They settled on a reservation in present-day Kay County. Their high death rate, unhappiness, and constant plea to return to their homeland were finally heard in 1885, when they were allowed to go to a reservation in Washington. 39 Indian tribes, of which 38 are federally recognized, maintain headquarters in Oklahoma today. The American Indian population, including Alaska Native and Oklahoma, in the 2010 U.S. Census was 482,760, second only to California. It's your turn. Number 1. Why were the Medicine Lodge Treaties of 1867 important? Number 2. Name two battles that took place during Sheridan's winter campaign. Number 3. Give two reasons for the Red River War. The following is a summary of Chapter 9. The assassination of President Abraham Lincoln in 1865 changed the course of Reconstruction for the country. The process of restoring lives was different in Indian Territory from that of the rest of the country. The Pacific Railway Act and the Homestead Act of 1862 opened up the West even more to land-hungry settlers and took more land away from the Indians. The 1866 Reconstruction Treaties punished the five tribes for their support of the Confederacy. The tribes lost much of their land in Indian Territory. The attacks and retaliation between the Plains tribes and white settlers heightened the dangers west of the Mississippi. New forts and camps were established to control the Plains Indians and force them onto reservations. The Medicine Lodge Treaty laid out the plans for reassigning the Plains tribes to this reservation land. In the Battle of the Washita in November 1868, Lieutenant Colonel George A. Custer led the 7th Cavalry against defenseless Indians. Fort Sill, located in the foothills of the Wichita Mountains, was built in 1869 by white troops of the 6th Infantry and by black troops of the 10th Cavalry, who were known as Buffalo Soldiers. Indian agents distributed rations and annuity goods to the tribes, although fewer and fewer supplies were received each year. Schools were established at several Indian agencies to educate Indian children. Due to the deteriorating conditions on the reservations, Indians became more hostile and fought a number of bloody battles in the Red River War. The Battle of Turkey Springs was the last armed conflict in Indian Territory between the U.S. Cavalry and American Indians. Although the area allocated to the Indians was shrinking, more and more tribes were relocated to Indian Territory during this period. Less and less land was available for each tribe.